This week, we'll bring you highlights from the recent North Carolina State AFL-CIO Convention with North Carolina Insurance Commissioner Wayne Goodwin, retired AFGE SSA Local 3509 member Michael Gravenese, and American Postal Workers Union Local 1078 member Louis Farisi. But first, we've been joined by Alliance for American Manufacturing President Scott Paul. Scott, welcome back to the program.
Good to be with you, Jason.
Scott, given the government shutdown, we didn't get the expected jobs report that we were hoping for on October 4th, though we do know that the U.S. has added only 12,000 manufacturing jobs in 2013. What can you tell me about this situation?
Well, the numbers speak for themselves. We need to make a lot of progress. The unemployment rate is still too high. I mean, you know, we've made slow and steady progress since the end of the Great Recession, and at least it's been moving in the right direction. But that's what I call kind of treading water. We will never see the middle class rebound or the economy truly rebound until we're able to get that manufacturing jobs number up. And I don't think we're going to see that manufacturing jobs number get up there unless we see some positive public policies coming from D.C. Actually, the last couple of weeks, it's been not positive. In fact, it's been the opposite. But the shutdown, the brinksmanship over the debt ceiling has exposed some of the deep fissures and irresponsibility. But left behind in all that as well is the fact that we don't have an economic agenda. We don't have a jobs agenda, and Congress has taken no steps whatsoever to try to get that in motion.
Scott, there seems to be a number of moving parts to this issue that impacts the manufacturing sector, the issue of job creation. Let's talk about the big one first, and most recently, the government shutdown. Has that in some way impacted manufacturing and its ability to create jobs?
Absolutely, it has. I mean, both directly and indirectly. So, you know, there are manufacturers who directly do business with the federal government, defense contractors and others that provide manufactured goods. And they obviously have been affected. There are companies that are awaiting a regulatory approval to export certain types of products. 90% of NASA's employees are on furlough, and a lot of manufacturing contractors interact with them and haven't been able to do that. Trade cases are not getting adjudicated to combat unfair trade practices committed by foreign firms against U.S. manufacturers. A lot of imported products are having a hard time. There's been less inspection of imported products, including things like seafood, which could certainly leave us exposed to more risk for foodborne illnesses and other things like that. So there's a lot at stake, and I know the federal workforce has been devastated, and there's a ripple effect, obviously, of that will affect the manufacturers of consumer products, because folks who are uncertain about a paycheck, although eventually they'll get one, are not as likely to spend some money in the short term.
Scott, you mentioned earlier another piece of this, which is kind of the policy piece in terms of the nation's commitment to creating manufacturing jobs. And that obviously starts with the president and with Congress. But the president, during his reelection campaign, promised to create 1 million new manufacturing jobs in his second term. Is that even possible at this point?
It's possible. Anything is possible. It's possible. But it would take an economic resurgence. It would take a better trade balance. It would take a lot more consumer demand. And then it would take, serious policies from D.C. That would look at how do we get companies to reshore jobs from overseas through our tax policy, our trade policy, workforce. So all those pieces have to fall into place. And when you look at at Capitol Hill today, you have to wonder if that's even possible. But you know, I think, you know, in a theoretical sense, we could absolutely get to a million new manufacturing jobs in the president's second term. I think it would help the economy enormously if we did that. But there's yet to be any of the actions in D.C. that would help to facilitate that.
Scott, knowing that this is such an important issue and that there really seems to be an opportunity within the country to restart the manufacturing push, why isn't there more being done in this regard?
Well, there's certainly public support for the idea of Made in America, and you see that, and you see some stores that are reflecting that, including some surprising ones like Walmart, although we'll see how serious they are. And so you see it out in the private sector, kind of a renewed interest in the whole idea of making things in our country. You certainly see it in politics, and you saw a lot of politicians run on a platform that was pro American manufacturing and pro factory worker. But you know, we're in a situation here in D.C. where we have this quagmire, and where we have Republicans in Congress that want to hold things hostage, where the debate certainly hasn't been about the economy and manufacturing jobs. And it would, you know, there are other political analysts far more qualified than me who can try to explain that. But to me, it's a tremendous disconnect. And this is one issue on which there's broad agreement among voters, among Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. And so it is a bit baffling to me about why this hasn't been embraced, because other countries are not shutting down, or not threatening default, or not sitting idly by. They're fighting for the manufacturing jobs. And if they're doing that and we aren't, we're going to be losing out.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Scott Paul, the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Scott, you've been out there pushing this issue for quite a while, and I have here an article that you wrote about manufacturing's place in our economy, and that brings me to another piece of this discussion, in which you point out that America still imports far more manufactured goods than it exports. Talk to me about that in this broader discussion.
Well, we do, and for your listeners, when they go to the store, if they go to, say, a Walmart or a Best Buy or something like that, and if they happen to turn over the label of the product, if it's clothing or electronic goods or toys, you know, the odds are that it's made in China or made somewhere else, and that's a manifestation of what the challenge has been. And it is a and so here's the issue. It's not that we shouldn't import. I strongly believe that you have to have two-way trade, and that's important. But there are two things that we don't do well. Number one is that we don't capture enough of our own market, and part of that is based on flawed public policies. Number two is that we have this imbalance globally, and we're far more willing than a lot of other countries to let imports coming in exceed the exports that we have going out. So it means that we end up, this is another debt that we owe, and you know, it's paid through lost manufacturing jobs, it's paid through a reduction in wealth and fewer job opportunities. But there's not nearly enough focus on this idea of what the trade deficit means to the United States or to our economy.
And Scott, to take that one step further, there's also a concern about some countries out there manipulating their currencies, right?
Oh, absolutely, there is, and I think this is the important point. Look, if this was about competition and our firms and our workers just weren't competitive with those in Japan and China and Mexico or anywhere else around the world, then that's one question. You say we have to get better at what we're doing, but you know, when you look at most measurements, we're highly competitive. The challenge sometimes is that you have countries that sometimes have policies that would be called market distorting, whereas on currency, they may have government policies through their central bank that reduce the value of their own currency. That gives them a trade advantage. It makes their exports cheaper coming to the United States. It makes our exports going into their country a lot more expensive than they should be. So that helps to inflate the trade balance, and there are things that can be done. There's legislation in the Congress that's bipartisan, has the support of senators like Sherrod Brown and Chuck Schumer and Jeff Sessions and Lindsey Graham, and in the House of Representatives by Tim Ryan and Congressman Sandy Levin from Michigan and Congressman Murphy from Pennsylvania and many others that can help to address this. But, you know, like a lot of issues, Congress just hasn't gotten to it this year. But it has a real and tangible effect on our ability to create new manufacturing jobs in this country.
And Scott, as we close out here, talk to me about the importance of, as you've noted, expanding the labor talent for this issue.
Well, that's critically important because for a couple of decades, you know, there had not been a lot of hiring in manufacturing. Now there is a little more opportunity to get a manufacturing career. You've seen auto companies bring jobs back. You've seen other companies do the same thing. You've seen the age of the manufacturing workforce advance to the point that there'll be a lot of retirements, and so there'll be new talent that will need to come into the factories. But our technical education system hasn't quite caught up with that. And so we do need some good federal policies, some good state policies to try to steer our community college system, our high schools, particularly vocational track, to try to build the skills in math and problem solving, in other sorts of technical skills like welding and machining that can prepare a new workforce. And it's important for manufacturing. It's also important for our national defense. It's important for our homeland security. And it's really important towards building the middle class because this is one of the few vocations, manufacturing, where you can get to the middle class without having a four-year college degree.
Scott Paul, the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Scott, always great to talk to you. Thanks for coming by.
Real pleasure to join you today, Jason.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll bring you highlights from the recent North Carolina State AFL-CIO Convention with North Carolina Insurance Commissioner Wayne Goodwin.